The following interview is part of the Tales of the Trade series created by fellows in the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Program.
I really love telling this story, actually, because I think it speaks to young people who are trying to find themselves and try to figure out what to do. So originally, I wasn't a photographer. I was a psychology major. I didn't take pictures. I didn't really have an interest. And I had an internship that took me to St. Elizabeth's Hospital, which was the mental hospital that was in the District of Columbia at the time. And after the first day on the job of that internship, I came home and I was like, okay, I need to change my major. And so my girlfriend and I, who's now my wife, we went about it like really systematically. We thought about, we kind of brainstormed, you know, how are you going to change your major? What are you going to do? And so I thought about what my life was like and how I wanted it to be. You know, if you're going to be spending 40, 50, 60 hours a week doing something, you know, you want to get it right. And I knew that I didn't want an office job. I wanted to have a skill. I wanted to be able to meet people. I wanted to travel. I didn't want to wear a suit. I didn't want to do any advanced math, you know. And then we got out of course catalog, and then we just started scratching out majors that didn't line up. And then I ended up with either photography or marine biology, but I was at a better school for photography. Politics inspires my work, but not politics in the sense of Democrat, Republican, but politics in the way people have to interact with each other and interact within the construct of the society that we all live in. And for instance, I've always said that black is a political definition, right? And there's different ways that, you know, we view ourselves. I definitely look at these power dynamics that are happening between people in the world and try to explore that with the work. And I think the second word that I would probably ascribe to my photography is emotion. And I always feel like I have a successful photo if you're reacting to it before you've even looked at the image completely. Like I reached right into your chest and grabbed you by your spinal column and shook you up first. And then I'm like, okay, that one's a winner. The two biggest natural disasters that I've covered were Hurricane Katrina. I was in New Orleans. And then 5 years later, I was at the Haitian earthquake. You know, I had covered tornadoes, different storms, even like the edges of hurricanes before, where you get some flooding and some trees knocked over. I'd seen incredible flooding. But, you know, the scale, number one, for those two disasters was mind-boggling. You know, in New Orleans, half the city was underwater. They really don't know how many people were killed. In Haiti, it was 100,000 people were killed in one day. And they couldn't get the bodies out. And they were doing what I call essentially gutter cremations, you know, just setting bodies on fire in the street. Both of them had a disproportionate impact on black people. Obviously Haiti, it's a black country. But also, you know, the way they popped those levees, you know, that hit black people real hard. And then when they pumped the water out, they weren't rushing to pump the water out of the lower ninth either. And, you know, they completely change that city. I think I spent about 10 days on each of those assignments, which is probably too long. There were so many stories of just resiliency, of people making the best out of like a really bad situation, people going on living. And not like just surviving either, but living, trying to pick up the pieces and getting back on with life. And I kept seeing that again and again, and I would make it a point to photograph that. But I also made it a point to photograph the things that I saw that were wrong. And, you know, you specifically get the full range of the black condition as well when you see it put under this kind of stress and how people respond and how people really care for each other, too. The photo that I have in the African-American Museum of History and Culture is probably the single greatest honor for me. I mean, to be, you know, my work has always revolved around people of color and trying to tell our stories. It's a picture from a go-go. I call it Groovin'. And it was from a series that I was working on, kind of looking at how black people party throughout the world, throughout the diaspora, you know, and whether you're at a Jamaican dance hall or go-go in D.C. or, you know, wherever, you know, the music might be different, the people might be slightly different, but the pictures look the same, you know, because that's universal. And so they were doing, it's part of their exhibit on dance. To be part of that museum when it opened, to actually have something in the permanent collection, and it's on display. It's not like, you know, you gotta put on white gloves and go in the back. People see it every day. That, yeah, I'm happy for that one. That I want to give them some more pictures. So, so first and foremost, I had the support of a wonderful, beautiful woman, right? Number one, and who understood the work, you know? Second, I've always said that family comes first. And, you know, you're looking for that balance. There was someone here earlier who was talking about trying to keep it balanced. And I certainly tried. I didn't always get it right. It was one time where I was working on the story about the boot camp. And the boot camp was really, really stressful. And when, you know, your family's important and young people are important to me, and I was in a position where I was watching them just screw up. I was watching them get abused, and I was later on watching them screw up their lives. And as a journalist, you're not allowed to get involved. You have to just document it, and whatever happens, happens. And that's a difficult place to be as a father, you know? And I remember being home after one of the visits out to the camp, and there was like a whole lot of screaming, yelling, snatching these cadets up and all the related abuse. And then I was home and I was brushing my teeth the next day, and I was so stressed out brushing my teeth that the toothbrush snapped in my mouth. Why? It just snapped in half, and I was like, okay, that's kind of a lot there. And so I realized that there was a lot that I was bringing home, and, you know, I got better at it, you know. But the other thing, too, was that my wife and I never really tried to, you know, you want to preserve your children's innocence, but we didn't necessarily try to shelter them from the world either. And so our dinner table conversations, often we talked about, you know, like during the Iraq invasion. We had friends over there, friends and colleagues over there that we were worried about and who were sending images back and reporting back. And so for us, it was good in that, you know, we didn't have to hide what Dad was doing. It was kind of a matter of course. And but sometimes I would go away for a while, 6 weeks, 2 months, and then be back home. You know, college campuses are active now. You know, it's like so much going on. I really love the energy, you know. You see all the young people and everybody's activated. Not just woke, people are activated. They're out there doing stuff. And there was a lot less of that when I was in school in the late 80s. But we did have apartheid that we were rallying around. And, you know, we were still trying to deal with, you know, the effects of the crack epidemic. And so there were different things that were in the news that we could get around that spoke to our condition. Young people keep you young, number one. But the other thing is that this is our future, right? And so when I come in here to BYFA and I see all these young people, all these black faces, and everybody's like so engaged, like, you guys don't have to be here, you know? And so you want it. I'm inspired by that energy. By anybody who wants to do it, I'm always inspired by it. It doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't matter. I've been a Nikon shooter for my entire career, except when I was a Leica shooter. And then I was a Hasselblad shooter for a while too, but it's all different tools for different jobs, you know? It depends on what kind of job it is, right? So sometimes I'm a documentary photographer. Sometimes I'm a portrait photographer. if something's going on, I got to show up and make pictures. It's real simple for me. I like 3 different lenses on 2 cameras at the same time. I want a 20 millimeter, I want a 50, and I want a 180. So it's a wide angle lens, a normal lens, and a telephoto lens. And I can cover pretty much anything like that. If I need to make some portraits, it's pretty much, it's a very close to the same lens choice, but I like to have a light. I like to have some control over the way the final image looks. I don't want to leave it all to chance. But I think things are going to change. I can already feel my work going in a different direction. I've got some different ideas that I've been pursuing. You know, if you look at one of my favorite photographers, Gordon Parks. Gordon had this long, long career, and his photography changed throughout his career, but he also wrote like 7 books. He directed a couple feature films. He wrote and composed music. And so he did all this other stuff, but he was making pictures until the very end at 95. So if I can go out with that kind of grace, I'll take that.